When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Hey guys, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yes, it's about time. I mean, listen, we've been fans of the podcast for this long.
I was just laughing because, Stu, I've seen you make fun of people that start out things with hey guys before. And the first thing I say is, hey guys.
Yeah. That's okay. You're allowed because, like, you know what I mean? You have that privilege. I feel like you can get away with whatever you want, Bridget.
It just comes out. Like, I try and switch it up and nothing else seems natural to me.
It's okay. All is forgiven. Hey, guys. Thank you for having us, Bridget. Ghost Bunny podcast. It's about time.
Yes, I know. I know. And it's the perfect timing, too. So I wanted to tell the listeners just like how I know you guys and how long I've known you guys. Just start out with like the basics. So when I met Nick, you guys kind of came along with it.
True. We were his baggage.
Yes.
I was a curse.
Because, so Nick and you were really great friends, played hockey together, hung out all the time. So I feel like I saw you all the time.
That's true. That's true. And like, it was really funny because like Nick and I did play on a hockey team. We played for many years together and like Bridget would come watch the games and like the other team would be like, how did you guys get her to show up at your game? But you were like literally probably the best supporter. I mean, I grew up playing hockey in Canada, and I don't think my parents supported me in my games as much as you supported me in my adulhood. So thank you, Bridget.
I know Nick, you know, fairly well. I know short hair Nick. That's how long I know Nick.
Yes.
So there was short hair Nick when he used to come in. I remember Stu used to be like, hey, because I used to go back and forth from LA to Toronto all the time. And he'd be like, I found a replacement while you're gone. And like, he's got better abs than you. I'm like, who's this guy? And like in walks like this, like it's Nick, short hair, chiseled jaw, Nick. And he was his new, he was my replacement on Blades while I left the city of Los Angeles. But that's how I know Nick. He's got great abs.
He got great abs.
I don't know if he still does, but we'll go with that.
Okay, so you guys are brothers-in-laws, and I don't know why that's so hard for me to say that. But yes. Brothers-in-laws. And how long does that go back?
That goes back a long time. Actually, Adam and I were friends. We met probably over 20 years ago now. Holy crap. And we met at a poker game, of all places. And my sister was there with me, like playing cards.
Like but hold on. It was like not like a poker game, like at a casino, like an illegal underground, yes. You know, suburban basement poker
the best
game.
Kind.
Yes.
Yes.
And I guess Adam and my sister became friends at that point. Adam and I.
Well, no, that's not you. Whoa. Don't, I guess you and I had our friendship. I'll bring you back because Stu's memory's a little lost these days. But Stu and I were like, you know, we kind of attached together because we're both. I learned that he was an actor. I was just getting into acting. I, you know, wanted to move out to LA. He was already living in LA. We had common friends. They put us together and like, hey, you guys should hang out. And as we did, I went down for a couple stints. You know, Stu, I would stay with Stu and Wes at their house. And, you know, then when he needed a place to crash, he would come to my place. We then came back to Toronto at the same time. And I think Stu was like, hey, I want you to meet somebody this is my sister, Dina. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so crazy. Dina, this is amazing. Your brother Stu's introducing me.
This is the first story I've ever heard.
And we went to, We went to the University of Western Ontario. You were playing a show. I've never met your sister before that at that time. Okay. I didn't even meet your sister when I was there.
Okay.
So then when we came back, so I knew you way before I knew Dina.
That's true.
You made the intro to Dina.
So far.
Huh?
That's the only true thing you've said about this story so far, is that you were friends before.
That's correct.
Here's my sister Dina. You guys should meet. It's great. That never happened.
It did.
I didn't know I was opening a can of worms like this. I thought this was a simple story.
No, this is good. You know what? I'll tell you about it. This story has really brought us together, and now it's become like what we are known for, and we travel with it, and we own it. And without that happening, we wouldn't have had this incredible, successful company that we're sharing with you right now.
Adam is married to my sister. He is the father of my two amazing nieces. He is the husband to my sister, and he is my business partner, and we make movies together, and that is true.
I think I need to ask Dina how this all came about.
You should.
She'll tell you.
You should.
Okay, so how did making movies come together? Like you, I know, Stu, you were already acting. Adam, I know you wanted to do acting and stuff, but how did actually starting this company come together?
I think like the first thing is, you know, we always used to like write these like short scripts and skits and, you know, shoot stuff when we were together, either in Toronto or Los Angeles, and come up with different ideas for TV shows. And we were both auditioning for stuff. And, you know, the audition world is like a crapshoot, right? Like every 50 auditions you go on, you're going to get one or whatever. But even if you're lucky to get one. So we learned from, you know, to create your own content and kind of control that, being your own gatekeeper was the only real way you'd make your success. And we're like, shit, let's just start a company, go out, start grinding. And it really started with like cold calls. Like I would just like cold call any company that I could see and be a part of a meet in Toronto, because it was a huge hub for the industry. And I ended up getting some meetings for us. And Stu and I put together an incredible song and dance. And out of the meetings we took, we got someone to give us an insane deal. That's a true story, right, Stu?
I was going to ask you. Do you agree with this?
I agree with most of it. I mean, I did a little bit more of the singing and dancing song and dance category. Adam and I went in to go meet with this company that we were checking up on a project that we had done, like a sizzle reel, as they called in the business. Mm-hmm. And we went to go check on the update of it. And while we were in that meeting, someone else from the company walked in and saw us sitting on the couch and was like, "Hey, Stu, you're a director, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Adam, you produce, right?" And Adam's like, "Yeah." He's like, "You guys want to do a horror movie?" And we're like, "Sure." And he's like, "Yeah, okay, let's do it." And like literally, that's how it happened. We got
actually, that is almost true. He comes back, he goes, "You know what? No. Let's do two." And I swear to God, we left that room with the deal to do two movies.
And we were like, what just happened? So we started, like, we were pitching a home renovation show, and we left with a horror movie deal. So we did these horror movies, and they went pretty well.
Before you move on to the movies, I just want to say how like serendipitous that is. That's almost paranormal. Like talk about being in the right place at the right time.
Literally at the exact right place at the right time. Our career together as filmmakers got started. Like we literally were pitching a home renovation show with the wrestler Rob Van Dam and his ex-wife called Hardcore Home Improvement, where he would be like improving homes, doing wrestling moves. And they passed on that, but they picked up the opportunity to do some horror movies. So we did these horror movies. They went pretty well. After that, we did a documentary called Jack of All Trades, which is a baseball card documentary that was pretty popular. It kind of put us on the map on Netflix. But we still owed another horror movie for our deal. So we decided, let's shoot another horror movie, but like a documentary. So we shot this movie called Faking a Murderer. And that came out last 2 years ago now. And it went so well that we now have just shot a sequel to it. And that brings us to why we're here today, because, you know, that's where Bridget comes in. Obviously, Bridget, you've been a part of different highs and lows in my professional career along the way, but we can save that for another podcast. But like, this is probably the most fun that you and I have had together in a show, I would say, probably.
For sure.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Well, okay, I want to go back a little bit because the first movie you guys did, the very first one, was it Scarecrows?
Yeah, before that, we did one called The Haunted House on Kirby Road, which
was first.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. The backstory to that was really awesome because it was how are we going to come up with these stories? And there's this kind of thing out there called a creepypasta. Are you familiar with the term creepypasta?
Yeah.
And so we would like go and like just kind of look. So we know that we wanted to write, have to deliver a horror movie, but Stu and I really excelled in comedy and how are we going to disguise this? And so we're like, oh, we'll coin the phrase of stoner horror and we'll get away with writing a comedy disguised as a horror movie. And I went through different stories that I kind of came up with in Thornhill.
That's not accurate.
I was there.
Because the Kirby Road is a real street and they're really
house.
And like kids do go, there's people in the folklore behind this house is that there's this haunted house on Kirby Road just north of Toronto. And
well, hold on, because that's where I was going. Because
we discovered after.
That's right. That was the interlude into the conversation.
Right.
But as growing up in high school, there was this house on Kirby Road that if you grew up in Thornhill, Ontario, Canada, you knew about this place called Kirby Road. And there was a story that went by where a man was driving a tractor and he accidentally killed a little girl while he was, cutting the lawn or doing his work in the yard. And if you drive by that house at a certain time on a certain day, you could see the ghost of this girl. And when you were in high school, you would go smoke, do things and get yourself to another level and go and try to, sneak onto this property and things would scare you and you'd hear stuff. And it was you could hear like things around you that could only be explained as paranormal. People do think that they saw actual, ghost shapes and things that are in the house. And it became a popular spot and like people would just go there and hunt for ghosts.
Yeah. It was definitely like a hangout spot. So we mentioned that to them when like they were asking us what movie we would want to do. And we just like Adam just started riffing on this story. And then I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. And we talked about that. So we actually wrote the movie based on that actual real thing. Now we had to change some things because of legalities and whatnot, but like that was our first movie was based off a real story, a real haunting story, which is, I didn't even think of that until right now. It didn't even connect that like our career started with like paranormal, a real paranormal story because
yeah.
like that Kirby Road story is a legit story that people, big urban legend. We did that movie.
Did you guys ever experience anything in the house, whether it was in high school or filming later?
Yeah, I mean, like I would go there with guys who were a bit older than me. So I think that like they would be kind of trying to scare the shit out of me in the house. But like bangs and the howling winds and it was very eerie, right? Like it's a very like when you go to these haunted places, like they're condemned places. Like you're not supposed to be there. It's already scary enough without any light. And, your friends are trying to scare the shit out of you just to have a good time and rag on you. But you do feel like a weirdness. Like there's a weird type of
what
thing.
What do you think of the prototypical like 15, 16, 17-year-old teenagers going into like an abandoned haunted house? You can only imagine. Like it's like how you would picture it to be in a movie where like dumb teens go into a house and they're like looking for ghosts and then ghosts show up. That is basically the plot of the movie.
And it's basically what we did in real life. And we're like, okay, how are we going to recreate this house?
Yeah.
And luckily we had some other friends who had a condemned house. They were going to tear it down and they were going to rebuild their future home. Mm-hmm. And we said, whoa, 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 don't do anything. Can we come and see it? And Stu and I walked to this house to scout it out and it was scary as fuck already. And inside, I remember this. Do you remember this? Inside this closet, there were white fur hanging jackets, and that's it. That's the only thing that remained in this house. Upstairs, it was covered in raccoon poop.
Also, the
and
guy
just
that
grossness.
Cleaned up the house, like we hired a guy to like come in and sort of clean up the house. And after the second night, he refused to be there because he said it was haunted.
Yeah. So we're like, okay, this is going to, you know, let's just go with this and we're going to tell everybody what we're doing here. But, you know, listen, it was a scrappy, really low budget thing. And this is our big shot to like kind of show people what we could do, not in front of the camera, but behind the camera. And, you know, that we could deliver, you know, a real movie. And we had the real haunted house and we, you know, cast amazing actors, some actors now who are now like one of the principals on The Handmaid's Tale, you know, that started in our films and really kind of, so we got to really like go through the entire process with casting and, you know, locations and all that stuff and put this thing together, which is what we love to do, right? Like actually getting it all up.
Looking back on it now, I can, you know, we could have done better, but at the time,
when you say we, you mean you?
No, I mean we.
So when you say we, you do mean you?
No, I mean we, as in the French for yes. I would say that you know, it's for what it is. It's unbelievable because we had never done anything like it before. We were handed a bunch of money and just trusted to go make a movie, and we delivered. On that front, we kicked ass. And the movie ended up actually being very successful in film festivals. We won a bunch of film festivals with it. So it was like we were on our way. The next movie we did was called Scarecrows, which also had a horror element to it where a farmer, like these people, teens, always was teens with us, but teens would like sneak onto a farmer's cornfield to like drink and do whatever and party. And a farmer would catch them on the cornfield and turn them into human scarecrows and leave them up to die. So you'd see all these scarecrows on the field and you wouldn't realize like those are actually people. So that was sort of the twist.
Yeah.
That movie came out pretty well also. And you know, it kind of gave us a good reputation as far as like being able to do these like sort of quirky horror movies. But I think our style has evolved in a crazy way where we are sort of doing these hybrid movies now, which combine our storytelling with real people. And again, like that's what we did in Faking a Murderer, which I encourage your viewers to watch and your listeners to watch. But this next movie, Don't F With Ghosts, also known as, can we swear on the show?
Yes.
Don't Fuck With Ghosts, which is, you know, where Bridget, actually, you got to come and be a part of this movie and you are a real person who did real things with us.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question on that. Like when you got our call, like what was your initial reaction to what we were doing?
Super excited.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
So just to set it up for your listeners, Stu and I are amateur. In this movie, we're amateur ghost hunters. We want to, you know, deliver a paranormal series to a broadcaster, and we are going to prove to the world that ghosts are real, and that's what we really set out to do. And then kind of things go all different ways until, you know, the movie ends, but I can't spoil it for you.
I'll say this, that the idea to get Bridget involved, to get you involved, was a no-brainer. I'm sure your viewers and your listeners and your fans know from Girls Next Door how you were like the queen of Halloween on that show and all that. But in real life, you really are the queen of Halloween. That's not just a TV show gimmick. Like, I've been to Halloween parties at your house after that show that like blew my mind. You go all out for Halloween. And I know that Bridget really had the ghost equipment. I know that she went out ghost hunting. I know that her and Nick went to like stay at haunted motels on purpose. You know, that her and her sister, I mean, we would have these conversations over the years where Bridget would tell me all about these ghost hunts. And I always was curious about going with her. And it just never lined up. Like, you invited me a bunch of times, and it never really lined up. But the fact that we were able to do it in this environment was incredible. And I will say that Bridget delivered the goods. She came, and not to give spoilers out or anything like that, but Bridget came ghost hunting with us for this movie. And like, we're amateurs, man. We were going into this as bumbling fools. Like, you know, we think you just go in and ghosts are just going to show up. Bridget has all the equipment. Bridget has all the light readers and the energy readers and the cool, like literally thousands and thousands of dollars of equipment. She is so serious about this stuff that it is infectious. It makes everybody sort of get into the, you know, if someone has an opportunity to go ghost hunting with Bridget, I suggest you do it.
Not to mention when she walks, you know, to the location, she's got this like knapsack, which caught my eye,
the ghost pack. Kind of looks like that.
Which was awesome.
Back there.
Yeah, kind of.
And I'm like, all right, she means business. Go ahead.
Yeah, before when you guys first called me and you said you asked me to be part of the show and everything, I was like, yeah, I want to do it. But I took it like super seriously. So like I got the list of locations that we were going to, and then I investigated them online, like researched them, I should say, online. And then I realized that one of the places is very well known in the paranormal industry as being like an OG, like paranormal thing. Like way back in the 1800s, there was a doctor that was doing experiments and trying to communicate with the other side. And so I actually found out that the University of Winnipeg had all of the old research papers on that and the photographs, and they were doing like a display of things. And I contacted people, like professional parapsychologists in the area, to discuss it. And like, wow. I was like, I have to go to the University of Winnipeg and look at the original research material. And you're like, well, I don't know if there's gonna be time for all that.
I mean, honestly, if we had more time with you, I feel like you would have like been you could have run for mayor of Winnipeg. Like,
I'll tell you, we did many ghost hunts, right? And we only have we only have 90 minutes to really tell our version of the story, but you successfully like really like all the ghost hunts, because we can't put everything in there, right, that we shoot. Yeah. But the ones that you were a part of were really special, and they really stood out.
Yeah, I remember we went to a haunted museum also.
Yeah.
We went to a haunted room in a hotel. That was crazy.
That was
so amazing. Which is the location that you're talking about, Bridget? Like, what was the
Hamilton House?
Well, I'm talking about Hamilton House is the one that I did the majority. Well, I'd researched all of them, but the first house with the costume shop in it and everything, that one, yeah. You know, that's where the doctor lived who was doing like parapsychology type stuff way back in the day before it was even like had a name to it. So that was the one that I was most interested in. But the one that I feel like we got the most actual stuff in is the hotel room.
Right.
And I don't know if that could be a lot of different factors. It could also be the fact that the first one is the first one. So everybody doesn't know each other, and there's like nervous energy, and like, you know, it's not as comfortable. But as the night goes on and people become more comfortable and they let their guards down a little bit, I feel like that allows for more things to happen. And I do want to tell all the listeners, yes, it's a movie, but it wasn't like there was a script, and it wasn't like, at least in my situations, nothing was set up. Like, this was like a real investigations, and let's see what happens, and we're just gonna film it. It wasn't like there were things set up, but things happened in there. Can we give a couple of spoilers as what happened?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think like there's like, yeah, well, you haven't seen the movie yet, so you don't really know what's in
or out of the film. I'd love to hear. Like,
I would love to just tell what I experienced.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think it's important for like everyone to like understand, like, this is shot like a documentary. This is a documentary. It's part documentary. There's many different assets and things that we have done in, you know, other styles of filmmaking that I don't want to spoil, but everything that we do is authentic when it came to the ghost hunts. And that was that was the most important thing for us.
Yeah. Well, for me, there not too much happened at the museum, even though I felt like there was definitely something there. If we had more, I'm not at the museum, but at the Heritage. Is it called the Heritage House?
The Hamilton House, yeah.
Hamilton House.
At the Hamilton House, I definitely felt that there was an energy there, but we didn't have enough time to really like bring that out. But I felt like if we had more time, we definitely would have experienced something. At the next mansion, that museum, that Ouija board was definitely moving, and Stu was like freaking out on it. But I mean, it was definitely moving and spelling things out. And I thought that was pretty cool. But the most significant stuff happened in the haunted hotel room. And the first thing that happened is there was already a psychic in there who supposedly didn't know anything about the history of that room. And she definitely didn't know me, and I did not know her. And I had out the SLS camera, which I know people think differently about the SLS camera, and it's fine, but this is what happened. I have it, and of course it's mapping out all the people in the room. We're filming, so there's a lot of people in there. But all of a sudden, I see a stick figure laying on the hotel room bed, and there's nobody on the bed. And then as I'm seeing that, the psychic goes over to that part of the bed and starts petting that part of the bed and telling the girl ghost that's supposedly laying there that everything's going to be okay. And it's on my screen, a stick figure laying right where she's talking about. So I thought that was pretty significant. But still, you kept trying to turn my camera, but I'm like, it has to shoot. Like, because you wanted the other cameras to catch it. I'm like, but if I move it, you won't see it anymore. Yeah. I have to keep it right here.
I gotta tell you that, like, all
that
stuff. I
totally forgot about that. Holy crap.
There's a ton of stuff. And again, like the table tipping, remember
that's the next thing I was going to say.
Yeah.
That is the very first time I've ever been involved in an actual table tipping session that worked. And we had two K2 meters on the top of the table. It was just like a flimsy card table. And we were all barely touching. It was just the tips of our fingers. And this card table slid several feet in all directions. And you could feel it vibrating at first and kind of bouncing a little bit at first. And then it was like moving and it was clear. Everybody was just like dangling their hands over the top of it. Sometimes everybody took their hands off just to prove they weren't moving it. And the K2 meters, both of them were lighting up at the same time. Like, I felt like that was one of the most significant pieces of evidence that I've been involved in.
Wow.
Yeah, that was crazy.
That's crazy. I'm having flashbacks to it because, like, I'm going to admit it now. I'm a skeptic, and I was a skeptic going into it. And, like, I was leaning on Bridget a lot the entire process because, like, I trust Bridget, of course. I know she's not going to BS me. But, you know, I was having trust issues with everybody around me because, like, I just felt like someone was trying to mess with us. And that tipping table was pretty wild. I'll have to admit. That was pretty wild.
I remember it starts moving and you immediately get underneath it and you're, like, looking around, like, who's moving this table? Yeah. And the Ouija board at the other place, you were like, you're moving it. They're moving it. Somebody else is moving it. And it's possible. It's possible for that.
You should have seen the stuff when we were editing this film. There was other crazy things that we would get. We would have slowed down audio footage that was like real creepy. We would have like missing files and frames and some other stuff happened that we documented. We wrote down or something. Stu, do you remember with Tom editing?
Yeah, there's all these, like, we call them gremlins, but like, just like mysterious things kept happening during the edit session, like while we were editing Ghost Hunts. And it was just really, really bizarre. And I know that sounds like BS, but it's the truth. It really did happen. And I'll say that, like, there was definitely a huge learning experience for me personally, and I'm sure Adam. Like, I went into this sort of, like I said, with one eye open and one eye kind of like looking over here to see, like, how are they doing this? And, you know, after having gone through it, I definitely learned a lot about the entire process. But the most important thing that I learned about the entire paranormal world is that if you are going in there not wanting to see anything, then chances are you're not going to see anything because a lot of it is your mindset, your attitude, and your openness to sort of like open yourself up. And a year later, I regret how I was behaving at some of these places because maybe we would have actually gotten more stuff if I wasn't acting like a dickhead.
And I accept your apology. Thank you.
But it's having time to sort of live with it and be around it and sort of reflect back on it. You know, had I gone into it with a more open mind, I think I would have had a different experience altogether because, like, I went into it trying to prove that, like, there's no way that this is real. And, like, that was my personal hypothesis. And so you're going to get out of it what you put in. Do you know what I mean? Had I gone in there with a different open mind that something could be, you know, I feel like it would have been a better experience for me personally. I'm so happy that you had a great experience. I know that it's reflected on in the film, the experience we had. I don't know if that table tipping thing made it into the final cut of the movie. But,
really?
It doesn't really fit our narrative.
Okay. Well, like I said, I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know how it's actually going to, you know, pan out. But
we'll have to see how the movie comes out because at the end of the day, we are making like an entertaining kind of movie.
Right.
But, you know, I do remember that tipping table very well. And it would scare the hell out of me at the time.
I actually remember like getting out of my seat and be like, no.
Yeah.
I could not believe it. And I think when you see and when people get to see this film, it's going to take you for a ride and it's going to be a very thought-provoking, you know, 90 minutes.
I will say, like, on a spoiler note, without giving away, like, too much of the movie, like, any attitude that Adam and I, or specifically me, had towards this whole thing, and, like, you know, whether we're skeptics or not skeptics, in the end of the day, we learn our lesson. And that's why the movie's called Don't Fuck with Ghosts, because, like, you shouldn't fuck with ghosts. You should, you know, you got to be respectful of the living and the dead. And so any sort of disrespect that we may have put out there while we were filming this movie came back at us in the way that we laid out the storytelling of the movie. So if we are jackasses in this movie, we pay the price for it. And so that being said, we have nothing but respect for people who are, you know, dead serious about the undead or the dead, I guess it would be. But, you know, we met real mediums and we met psychics. And of all the people that we went out with, Bridget, you were the most legit of, you know, in my opinion. I felt like there was a lot of performative stuff happening with the other people, which is fine because that's part of it, right?
Yeah, it's a movie.
Like, But I'm just saying, like, there's some mediums that put on a whole fucking show when they're doing their thing. But I felt like you are the most down to earth. Like, it's so grounded in reality that it's hard not to accept that it's really happening when we were out there with you. You should have your own ghost hunting show and let us know, because we'd be happy to.
Well, hold on. Maybe we could do a spinoff situation. You know?
Like, you should be the ghost money, ghost hunter. Because you literally are the best at it. And we were with people who were the best. But you were so great so calming. You were so calm.
Yeah. Well, it's not. Sometimes things are shocking when they happen. And it's like, holy shit, did you just hear that? Or and they get your adrenaline going. But I'm not scared of it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Which, like, you can tell. I remember when we were at the Hamilton house. And I don't want to delve too much into this because this is part of in the film, but we do all hear and witness something in that bedroom that we all got very excited about. I'll leave it like that. But, like, there was, but yeah, you did. You kept your composure very well. You're like, oh no, that's fine. That's supposed to happen. Actually, everybody who was an expert that came along with us all kept their composure. Stu and I were the ones who were, like, freaking out. But everyone's like, no, just have your reaction. Yeah. That's okay. And move on to the next thing.
It's funny because, like, you know, the story that we're trying to tell is a certain type of story. But, like, some of the stuff that we did with you that was, like, really great that didn't make it in the film because it didn't fit the story we were telling. But we went to that fire reader, remember? That was in the movie for a long time until it wasn't, because I loved it.
I loved that. So just to let the listeners know, when we were at the first location at the Hamilton house, they had I guess she's a psychic, but she reads through fire and smoke. And it was a cool process that I'd never seen before. But she takes a piece of paper. I put my hands on it. And then she takes the paper and then she puts it. There's, like, a flame, a special candle, and she puts it through all the smoke and everything. It doesn't start on fire. She just gets all the smoke all over it. And then she puts it down and she can read and see symbols in that smoke. And she gave me this whole reading that was like things
that
she knew.
It was dead on.
Well, go ahead. You could tell everybody what happened, because go ahead.
We'll probably release this footage as a bonus.
Yeah, but still, right now we're talking about it. Just say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. She just, like, knew stuff. Like, she knew. So I had just gotten my ring from Nick, and she was like, I see that. And there was a ring and it looked like my ring and it was in the smoke. And there was so many things, like, I can't even remember all the stuff she said. In fact, I was going to ask you guys, can I have copies of some of that footage?
Yes.
To put on here, because I feel like everyone's going to, especially if it didn't make it in the movie, because people are going to want to see that stuff.
I feel like we can probably get, like, the footage that didn't make it into the final cut. Like, we will, there is a home for it because it is incredible. So we should probably do that, Adam. But I keep going back to this. Like, when we're making a movie in the edit room and we're trying to tell a specific story, unfortunately, some stuff's got to go. Unfortunately, even stuff that's the stuff that was the most real sometimes had to go because, like, it didn't fit with the narrative.
Yeah,
because we're supposed to be bumbling idiots, which we are in real life. But that fire reading blew me away for sure. I also remember this is in the movie, but when we went into the museum and, like, I was holding those, like, two
dowsing rods
and they were moving and like people said they saw smoke. I was like, what the hell? Like, I couldn't believe it.
Do you remember seeing smoke, Bridget? Did you see the smoke?
I did see it at one point, not the whole time that it was happening, but I did see something coming from it, like just a light mist type thing.
And we like look back at the footage too, like umpteen times, because we're trying to inspect and really see. Like, we couldn't see it on camera, but I remember seeing it in the room.
Yeah.
It was bizarre. And everyone else too, when we canvas and see like who actually, like, everyone saw it except for Sue. Yeah.
Like, we went into this thing thinking like, you know, oh, this is going to be so easy. We're going to like go on these ghost hunts. Nothing's going to happen. And like, the joke's going to be on everybody. The joke was on us, because the people that we met blew us away with what the experiences that we went through. Like I said, I can't wait for people to watch it. Hopefully people will still like us after watching the movie.
Uh-oh.
but all that to say, I have a newfound respect for the paranormal investigative community per se. And I'd love an opportunity to do it again with a new mindset, and not one where like, I'm like, my goal is to try to like get something funny. I would rather go in there like and take all of my agenda out of my brain and just go in with a clear head and an open mind and try to contact the dead. Maybe we can do that with you, Bridget. Maybe we could go on another ghost hunt.
Yes.
You know, with no context and no agenda.
I would love that.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Do we know, like, do you know, Bridget, like, what's happening with the film now? Like, do we give you any information on who else? Okay, well, unless you have like, you could continue with your stuff at the end or whatever, we'll give you the whole like kind of like exciting layout plan of what's going on. But
okay.
I don't want to interrupt your format.
Well, no, I was just wondering too, Stu, you said that you were very much a skeptic in this movie. And do you think you're a skeptic in real life?
I would say that I'm less of a skeptic now than I was going into it, for sure. Like, I feel like I wasn't open-minded enough to see the evidence that I should have seen right in front of my eyes. Because like I said, I went in with an agenda. I was trying to make a movie where I was trying to prove that it's not real.
Yeah.
And that's my mistake, because by doing that, I had a preconceived notion of what I was, even if I saw something, I'm going to doubt it. Like, that's how I felt. I'm not a skeptic like that anymore. I'm a pretty superstitious person. And I do believe like there's definitely some kind of something going on. I definitely saw it. I witnessed it. And like I said, in editing it and having a chance to step away from the experience, I wish I could go back and have a mulligan and go back with like a different mindset, because there was so much happening that I could have experienced had I just like taken off my blinders.
Yeah. And you had never had anything paranormal happen to you before?
No. I mean, maybe, but not like that I identified as such.
Okay.
You know, I thought it was just like coincidence, maybe. Like, you know, like.
Wait, is there a story there or not really?
I can't think of a specific story off the top of my head, but I mean, I've had relatives and loved ones who have passed away who I feel like, you know, I still can like communicate, or, you know, people have that kind of vibe where you feel like you can still contact, or, you know, they're still watching over you. Like, spiritually, I feel like I do believe in that.
Yeah.
I do believe that like loved ones who were part of my upbringing, who are no longer with us, like are still around me and with me. Like, I do feel that. And I don't think that's cheesy to say that either. I do feel like that part of my spirituality is that. As far as like, is there like poltergeists that are like haunting people's houses? It's probably true. I still think that I would love to be there and like capture that evidence. It's just, you know what I mean? Like, I would love to see it. I'd love to get scared out of my mind because something like that is happening right in front of my face. A bottle is like flying by or whatever it is, you know, like I would love for that to happen. And I would say that it just about happened when we did our hunt. But here's just like to give you sort of the vibe of our presentation. Like, here's like a rendering as of now. Obviously, when you show this, it'll already have been out, or maybe it's going to change from this, but like, this is sort of like the vibe.
Uh-huh.
Well, that should kind of tell you like our vibe going into this.
Right.
And it turns out that we are completely in over our heads.
Well, Adam, what about you? Were you a skeptic before this? Had you had experiences?
I think that's what got me really excited about bringing this together. Like, I totally believe in like energy. I believe that there's energy out there. I believe that I've seen what I recall as apparitions in Los Angeles at our friend, common friend, Justin's house in his bathroom. And after I had that experience, I was told that other people have had the same experience.
Wait, what
like
do you mean?
They have these like two cloud shape, kind of just like quickly moving. I don't know if they're people or if they're what. There's two blobs of fast moving clouds, I would say, something like that, where it was just very quickly. But you could tell there's two of them. And other people said that they had that same experience, which was very interesting. I believe like in like, I have never, you know, the evil stuff and the poltergeist stuff that Stu mentioned, like that's, I haven't seen any of that stuff or come into contact with that. But I do believe in that there's an energy out there, that there's vibrations, and that, you know, I always want to think like, what, you know, there's something else after death. Like there has to be, and you know, that's kind of comforting. So I would say that there is something unexplained that's there. And the energy that I felt, you know, throughout this production, my research and all that, and in my past, you know, I'm a believer that there's something there. I just don't, yeah. I can't really qualify it, but yes,
yeah.
Also, there is something paranormal for sure.
Is there are premonitions considered a part of that universe? Because I definitely believe in that for sure. Like,
definitely.
And that's what I remember one of our films, actually another movie we did called Vandits, was based off of a three-way premonition that Stu, myself, and our friend Eli had. The same time, we all thought that our friend was going to die. And it was another friend, a fourth person. We were at our friend's recording studio. We took a break to have some fresh air.
Amy Rise's recording studio.
And we got into, it was Eli's car. And I got in, I felt very drained and white. And I was like, oh my God. And Eli's like, what? And I'm like, I just had a thought that Cable was going to die. And he's like, holy shit.
I had the same feeling.
So did I. Yeah. Then, like it was scripted. Stu comes into the back seat of the car and we look at him and he looks at us and he's like, I just had a thought that Cable was going to die. And Eli and I lost our fucking minds.
I remember chills.
We went to some diner after. It was like 2-3 o'clock in the morning.
Jeff leaves. So, and that's we thought that he was going to, something was going to happen to him on his way home and he was going to die. I literally had just, it just came up in my brain. And then these guys thought the same thing. All of us.
Before.
Yeah. So we,
I remember going to this diner just to get this out, and I sat down and my fingertips and my arms went numb, and I thought I was going to faint. And I went to the bathroom, splashed water on my face. Like it was the craziest thing that I've ever experienced.
What we did was we changed his fate, because like we called him to come back. We made up some excuse why we needed him to come back, because we wanted to try to like change his fate. This sounds crazy, but it's a true story.
Yeah.
And he ended up coming back. And I don't think he knows this story. I've never told him.
I've never told him.
And we ended up saying like, oh, let's go eat. And we went to that diner. Like it was
3 a.m. somewhere. I don't know where it was.
It was Dupars. We went to Dupars and we sat with him and we ate, and then he went home and he was alive. And it was like, we felt like we saved him. Interestingly enough, our movie Vandits, which is sitting, Adam's right behind his head there, we used that as the crux of the movie, that these four kind of friends have the same premonition and that someone's going to die. And we put that into the movie. But yeah, that was real. I would say like that's, there you go. So there's a paranormal experience that I definitely had. Then there's like, you know, you put something somewhere and it's like not there. That's happened before where it's like, and I don't know whether that's just being like a klutz or a clumsy or you forget where you put stuff. But like, you know, when you know, I know that I put my passport in this drawer. That's where I keep it. How is it not there right now? And then we're like talking around and everyone's looking for it. And then it's like, if ghosts are real, the passport is going to show up. And then a second later, the passport shows up. Like that.
Has
kind
that
of
happened
stuff.
To you?
That happened to me. That happened to me with Phil Glasser. I was like, Phil, if this passport shows up, because we were late to get on a flight to go on a thing, we need it, you know, I don't know where it is. The car's running, and I'm like, if this shows up, I will believe in whatever you tell me. And it was like, boom. He found it instantly. You know, that I don't know if that's a ghost.
Yeah.
Like I said, like I believed everything was coincidence, but now I'm not so sure about that.
Right.
I also worked, full disclosure, I worked for Chris Angel for many years as a producer of his TV show. So that kind of jaded me too. And so not to use that as an excuse, but like when you are in Santa Claus's toy factory and see how the toys are made, Christmas gets ruined. And that's what happened when I worked with Chris. We had episodes where we were like raising the dead and doing all sorts of stuff. So from a television production standpoint, when we were like producing these illusions, it sort of made me a skeptic instantly because like I knew how the rabbit came out of the hat.
Yeah.
You know, but
don't spoil it. I still don't know.
No, but you understand what I'm saying, Bridget. Like yeah. that I think contributes to why I was feeling the way that I was feeling. And of course, like for Don't Fuck with Ghosts, Adam and I set out to make an adventure that's funny and scary and two guys that are like idiots getting over their head. That's the story that we're trying to tell. In that storytelling, we go with real people who aren't part of our story. Like, you know, we didn't tell you anything.
Right.
And so we go out and do real stuff with real people and whatever happens, happens. And then we have to use whatever happened to like tell our story. So it's a very interesting way to make a movie. It's not conventional by any means. It's actually very hard because, you know, if my point of my movie is that like someone didn't die and then the person dies while we're shooting it, like how can I, you know, it's like, what am I going to do? Adam and I were always prepared that if we went out ghost hunting and something like this happened, that would change our opinion.
Right.
You know, and I don't think that we were open-minded enough to like allow for that to happen.
And oh, I was.
I blame myself if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Thanks for the apology again. Bridget, take it away.
Well, you know what I'm curious about too, and this might be more of a question for the listeners than it is for you guys, but one of the things that happened while we were there is it started to snow. And I mean, I live in LA. I don't experience snow ever. And so I was super excited about the snow. And it didn't occur to me till after. And I wonder if that has any effect on the paranormal and why we had more experiences later on in the night when it actually started snowing versus earlier when it was just freezing cold, but not snowing. Because water and I even feel like when there's a thunderstorm or different energy like that, like it really like amplifies things. And I'm curious if snow would do the same thing. And that's just putting that out there for general.
I think it was oddly enough to get a snowfall like that in mid-October. Right? Like that's rare. And I remember that it came right before we walked into the museum. And that's where a lot of, you know, that, you know, when you mentioned the Ouija, all that stuff took place. I mean, I could see that as something being, you know, a sign of something. Like that's just a rare thing to happen alone. And maybe it did bring out some energy.
I would say like, if I'm looking at this objectively, and I'm trying to kind of like come up with like a real sort of like plausible answer for what you're asking. You know, if you think of heaven and hell, for example, and if you believe in the afterlife and like a spirit either goes to hell or goes to heaven, the ghosts that you're encountering are maybe not in heaven or hell yet. They're like in between. So like hell is like super hot and like heaven is regular temperature. So like maybe the cold is like, that's that purgatory. That's that in between world. You know, when you watch movies like Ghostbusters, the newest one, that's like they have like a freezing kind of thing going on. I don't know if that is relevant to this conversation, but maybe that has something to do with it. Like, you know, like the ghosts that are like the ghosts that are in the middle, in the in between.
Yeah, the purgatory. I'm curious. That brings up my next question for you. You guys are both of the Jewish faith, and I'm curious how ghosts kind of fit into that and what your beliefs are in that.
It's interesting because, you know, I would say that like when it comes to like spirituality, we're both spiritual people, but I would say we were more Jewish as it goes to like the actual, you know, what it says in the holy books and all that stuff. I know that in religion, in Christianity, for example, maybe Catholicism, there's like the Holy Ghost and the Holy Spirit. That's part of the whole thing.
But that's one of the reasons I wanted to ask you, because the people that I know that are the most like devout Christians are anti-ghosts. They don't exist. They don't believe in any of that kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, how is that possible though? Like, I can't wrap my head around that when your whole thing is about ghosts.
Here's one for you. We in Jewish tradition, celebrate, Passover,
Raja.
and there's a story that folklore that goes along where at dinner, when you set the table, you set another placing for someone named Eliyahu,
Elijah.
And you're supposed to I came up with Eliyahu. And you're supposed to open the door to the front of your home. And during this time, Eliyahu would come in and you would have a glass of wine, soup or whatever. And by the end of the meal, the wine would be gone because Eliyahu would come in and have the drink. And then he would leave and go to the next house.
It's true. That is true. That is like a whole ghostly...
Well, I know it's true. That's why I'm saying it.
Yeah. No, so, that's interesting. I didn't even consider that.
So that's going to be like the most outright, thing that we could bring into this from the Jewish tradition as paranormal. It would be the story of Eliyahu. Yeah.
As a kid, like I legit like remember that, like that wine, I would like look at it and make sure and see, and then we'd go back after and it would be like less. Now, listen, it could have just been like my drunk uncle taking a swig, but like, The folklore and the tradition and the whole thing is that this ghost comes in and takes a sip of the wine to prove that it's existence, I guess. That's true.
That's fascinating. And it's so it's definitely not frowned upon, like ghosts or anything like that.
No. It's welcome. It's part of like that particular holiday. It's circled around Eliyahu. Like that is part of it.
There's also like a branch of Judaism that's called Kabbalah that like I don't know enough about to really speak on it, but I know that it's like it's very mystical and I believe that like the Kabbalah, they do believe in spirits and ghosts and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Of course I could be wrong, but like that's just what I think is I believe about it. But yeah, I don't know that like we were taught in Jewish school, so to speak, like about heaven and hell and ghosts and stuff like that. But we definitely like when somebody passes away, there is like traditions that the Jews or the Judaism does that's different than other religions that are very potentially paranormal. You know, we do something called a Shiva, which is like for 7 days or depending on when the person passes away, you kind of go and you visit a house. Like maybe at the end of a funeral, everyone goes back to the house and have sandwiches or whatever. This goes on for 7 days. Now at that house, you have to cover all the mirrors and you have to cover all the windows. It's like, it has to do with like the spirit and helping the spirit sort of, you know, find its way or whatever
That's so interesting. That's what they used to do in Victorian days too.
Yeah. That's what they do.
I think in that particular thing, like they do that so that you're not supposed to be looking at yourself.
No. It's more than that.
I don't know.
It is.
But it'd be good to look into and research because
it's so fascinating.
That could be interesting.
Yeah. At the end of our ghost hunting, somebody brought Palo Santo and we were lit it and doing the smoke around us and stuff. Do you have any beliefs in that kind of thing? Or did you just do it just to be safe? Or did you say, I don't need that. I don't believe in that.
I think that the term that everyone wanted to get smudged, right?
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to do a smudging and shed all of the evil spirits that were around that are surrounded you. There were a bunch of people on our set, like I remember our locations person and one of our production assistants were very adamant about being smudged after leaving all these houses. I think our locations person Karen, who is featured a lot in the movie, went through some crazy paranormal activity. Like she really got it from radio waves to this, to the sleeping, her dreams. Like she, when she was scouting different locations, like she would be getting that type of feedback. And, so she would be, after the movie comes out, she'd be someone interesting to talk to about it too, because she really had a go on her. But yeah, the smudging for me was, I did it just to kind of respect the progress and how, you know, they wanted to do things. And I wanted to experience, you know, what the steps are to really get, you know, through something like that. So it was interesting for me. Do you believe in smudging and like getting that stuff off you? Or is it something that is maybe...
I do believe that works because you can smudge a house, you can smudge yourself and everything. I do believe it works. I think there's no harm in doing it. I don't typically do it when I'm done with a ghost hunt. Some people carry crystals. Other people have like a cross. A lot of people do a bunch of different things to help protect themselves. For me, it's a mindset. I sort of have like a bubble around me. And when I go in, I have a very open mind. I'm here to be friendly. I'm here to have an experience. I'm here to see if you exist and what can happen. But the second I'm leaving here, like that's it, I'm done, I'm gone, and there's no coming with me, there's no, you know,
yeah,
that's it, we're done here with the experience or the experiment. So I feel like for me it's just more of a mindset But I don't mind doing those things. Like if somebody said, oh, here, hold this crystal for a minute, or here, put on this oil, or let's smudge or whatever. I'm like, yeah, cool. Okay, let's do it because it can't hurt.
That was another thing too that we learned was the frankincense, right?
Yes.
So before what I learned from this is before you enter any type of, you know, ghost hunt, you know, you want to put the frankincense on that helps, you know, keep the spirits away from you, or is it help them to not enter
well,
you or
if you
not-
put it right here, you're going to open your third eye, which makes you more okay. open to things.
So she actually like was, and her name was Sid. She was our medium, but I remember like she put it like on like her wrist, on her neck, on.
Uh-huh.
I thought Bridget met Sid. Sid was the medium that was in the hotel room with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So remember she took us through that. That process, and then you know, leaving it, the smudging. I like to follow the steps. I like to play the game and see.
What is like?
You know, I came out. I stayed free, so I'm good.
Yeah.
I've done some kind of things prior to this, which we didn't experience when we went with the actual ghost hunters, or the mediums, I should say. But when we were, you know, prior to that, some experience that I've had with people who are spiritual in the sense that they believe in ghosts or whatever, they. Sage is what I remember them doing. Like I'd sit down on a thing and like they would light a sage and they put it around me and do a whole kind
yeah.
of thing.
Like, yeah, you can use sage. The problem with sage is it supposedly gets rid of all the energies. And with Palo Santo, you just get rid of the negative energies and it yeah. keeps like the good energy, the positive energy around.
Right.
But sage is like all purpose. Like, let's get rid of it's everything. Like I don't want anything follow me home. Good, bad, anything.
Like the Mr. Clean magic eraser.
Yes. Okay, I think you guys are the perfect people. And Stu, I may have already asked you about this before, but I'm going to ask you again if I did. I want to do a horror-themed 80s style slasher, camp counselor slasher style workout video.
That's amazing.
Okay.
Where there's a killer after me. There's a killer after me, so I gotta like run in place, and then oops, I trip and fall like burpee style, and then I come up, and then I'm kickboxing, and I'm kicking.
That's really smart.
That's brilliant.
And like this killer is after me, and I have it in my head, and I want to do it so bad. And I was talking about it on my Girls Next Level podcast with Holly, and everybody's like, "Oh my god, no, you have to do that." And but
absolutely.
I just can't figure out how to make it.
Oh my god, that's
well,
so,
that, we could definitely help you make that. I think that's a brilliant, brilliant idea.
Yeah,
like
just like a 30 minute
workout.
Yeah, the killer workout. The
killer workout. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I do love that. You're the perfect person to do it too. Let's do it. Let's
cardio,
talk about that.
Super cardio,
yeah.
Yeah, it would have all the elements of different things. We could get like a
yeah, but you
actual-
could do different workouts like killer cardio, killer this, killer that. It's
you
like
can.
The killer workout series.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
that's,
we could have
I
an actual
that.
Fitness instructor or a choreographer to help us like make sure we're not gonna hurt anybody with the moves, like the real legit workout moves, but it's all horror themed.
Brilliant. 100%.
Love it. So
that,
okay.
I can't believe no one's thought of that already. That's brilliant.
We'll talk.
Okay, we will. I love that.
And then I was going to say we should also get together and do an actual ghost hunting show because like you said, you can't expect like going on all these auditions and stuff like nothing ever happens. You have to take things into your own hands. And that's why I'm doing this podcast too, because I feel like when I've tried to do a paranormal show or anything like that, people who are in the industry say I'm too Scooby-Doo or female-led paranormal doesn't sell. But I think it does, and I think they're wrong, and I think being too Scooby-Doo is a positive thing.
Oh,
I'm like,
I love
thank
that.
You. I am Scooby-Doo.
Yes. I first of all, I want to say that I am of the Scooby-Doo generation, and I grew up watching Scooby-Doo and loved Scooby-Doo. So God bless you for being Scooby-Doo, because the world needs more Scooby-Doo and less snuff.
I think so too.
But I think you'd be the perfect, perfect conduit to go out and seek the paranormal. I would watch that show. I'd make that show.
Would there be a way to like combine the workout stuff within a ghost hunting show? Like every location to go see, like you do a workout at the location, like that I've never seen, like that could be interesting too.
I think that's a spinoff. Let's table it.
Okay, one last.
Bridget loves it.
One last question. What's your guys' favorite scary movie?
Ooh, what's your favorite scary movie, Adam?
I mean, when I was a kid, it was Little Monsters.
Little Monsters?
Yeah, do you remember that one?
That's scary.
Oh, when I was a kid, I was terrified. With Howie Mandel in that makeup, Jesus Christ, living under your bed? Yeah, that's a kid's horror movie. To date, I just watched, have you seen Long Legs?
I haven't seen it yet. Is it good?
Okay, it's great. And I'm not going to spoil it, but that really surprised me. And then look, when I was a kid, my dad and I used to watch Poltergeist, and that was something that really got me as a kid. And I think being frightened enough whenever that movie came on really stuck with me. So that definitely was up there.
The Poltergeist house is for sale right now.
Oh, I saw.
I would say that Poltergeist is probably the greatest. It has to be, right? And maybe there's a generation maybe the generation before us would say maybe The Exorcist, but like the next generation, Poltergeist was The Exorcist for like my age for sure. Again, like I'm jaded. I was like a child actor, so like I would watch movies and know like this is not real.
Yeah.
So the things that would scare me were things that were more grounded in reality and less about like boogeymen chasing you. So like I would watch Halloween and Jason and you know, I'm wearing my Nightmare on Elm Street 3 shirt now.
Love it.
I'd watch those movies and be cheering for the bad guys.
I think that's a lot of what you see in our movies too. Like we try to, you know, write these villains and antagonists as people that it could actually happen. You know, yes, they're fictitious stories, but like really there could be a psycho farmer who could kidnap teenagers and turn them into living scarecrows to die of starvation on his field. That could happen.
Like the movie that scared me the most as a kid is like not even a ghost movie. It was like a Ted Bundy TV movie or something where like I thought like, oh my God, this guy's going to climb in my window and kill me and my family. Like I was scared of that.
Yeah.
More than I was scared of Freddy or Pinhead or Michael Myers or anything like that. But of all of the horror movies, I would say that Halloween was my favorite of the main, you know, like the big three or the big four.
Yeah.
I would say that Halloween was my favorite. Michael Myers was my favorite of all the bad guys. And maybe Jaws was like a scary movie too, but that's not really like a ghostly kind of movie.
Yeah.
That's a creature feature.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for doing the show today. Tell everyone listening how they're going to be able to watch the movie and how they can follow you guys on social media.
Well, this is the most fun part of our film is that when we made our movie Faking a Murderer, which is the first edition of this kind of Stu and Adam franchise, we got into the hands of a comedian, small comedian, his name's Kevin Hart, and he took it to within his company. And they signed on for this next version of the Adam and Stu saga where we go and try to prove that ghosts are real. The movie's called Don't Fuck with Ghosts. Heartbeat Studios has picked it up for U.S. distribution. So it's going to be available on Halloween on all VOD in the U.S. If you're living in Canada, it will be coming out in theaters via Cineplex across the country, Vancouver, Calgary, Winnipeg, Toronto, and Halifax. And then again, we'll go on video on demand, coming on Halloween. Those are the initial dates.
And then we expect it to be launched on streamers in January. So wherever you like stream your movies, that's where it'll likely show up in January. But October 31st, like Adam said, Halloween, search for it. It'll be on demand and people will be able to check out our movie, which is a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. It's kind of scary, but it's really fun. It's not a movie that's meant to give you nightmares. You're going to laugh more than you're going to scream. It's pretty funny. But there is, like I said, the ghost hunting that we did was 100% real. We did not have people hiding behind the walls. Like, you know, we didn't set up anything.
Yeah.
We went up there and we just shot whatever is going to happen. And that's what happened.
Yeah. Do you guys have any social media handles you want to give out?
Sure. We have our Instagram is 57 Films, and I'm Stu Stone. That's Adam Rodness. You can find us both on.
I could sit mine. I'm Adam Rodness. RODNESS.
Yes, and we're on all of the social media platforms with our names. But 57 awesome. Films on Instagram is a good follow.
Okay. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Ghost Bunny Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today on my spooky adventures. And I look forward to sharing a new ghost story with you guys next week. Please subscribe to our podcast so you're always the first to know when a new episode is out. And follow us on social media @Ghost Bunny Podcast on Instagram for photos and sneak peeks. Bye, guys.